Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic's Tuesday National College Football Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Nicole Auerbach. I am thrilled this week to be joined by my friend and colleague, Max Olson. You guys know him from The Athletic, to break down everything spring ball in an hour or less, because that is our promise for Power Hour. Reminder, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the Andy Staples and Friends show. Plus, we're the palate cleanser for whatever food takes and arguments and random rankings that Ari and Andy will do later in the week. So we will balance it out. Max, hello. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It is great to see you. I have seen many photos of Theo and not that many photos of your face lately. So
that's true. That, you know, once you have a kid, kind of the primary objective there is just to create content, you know?
Yes.
And so he's been fantastic at that. We went to the zoo yesterday for the first time. He just sat in the stroller. He doesn't really get that he's at a zoo, but first of many. He's starting to sleep a lot. So we're doing pretty well over here.
Yeah. I feel like, probably half your day is spent just kind of like getting his reaction shot and pairing it with whatever is the trending cultural moment of the day. I feel like that's what babies are for.
Yeah, that, you know, he's like, there's kind of this golden hour when you first wake him up and you lay him down on the change table, and he that's when he starts giving you some smiles and giggles, and that's when you got to try and capture the magic there. But he's starting to giggle more. One of the things he's really picked up on is, like, at dinner time, he gets fussy, and we lay him down on his dock tot on the couch, and he watches. There's this channel on YouTube TV now, MTV Classic, that just plays music videos, and like they even have like a show of TRL era videos, which I bet you would like. And he just like lays there and pumps his arms and gets into it. So we're problem solving over here.
You're raising him well. Actually, that sounds like what MTV just should have always been. It never needed to change, really.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because we grew up in the peak MTV time when they had music videos, and also their reality content was like the best early on. You know, I enjoyed watching Real World. What happened?
I think it still exists, actually. Now it's morphed into like The Circle and Love Is Blind, which we also watch. So
we do. Yeah,
there is a healthy evolution there. Did Theo watch spring football? Like, did he consume his first college football content?
We were all down in the basement watching college football. He watched a little bit, and my wife got a little teary-eyed, because she's like, this is a moment. We're having a moment. It's like, yeah, there's gonna be a lot of this, you know? So he seemed okay with it, didn't get too upset, with how, you know, meaningless a lot of this stuff was. I think he just liked all the bright colors on the big screen.
So it's kind of like the opposite of everyone on Twitter who does complain.
But it's that time of the year. We enjoy the bright colors on the screen, right? That's all really is. It's just the act of football that we get to see. You know, it's something. You know, I don't know that, like, I'm not usually a hot take artist, and it's hard to be a hot take artist off of spring games. But it was just nice to have in our lives, and we didn't have them last year, so. Yeah. That's worth noting. At least these guys got through a whole spring ball.
Yeah, and it was also the anniversary of the famous Bo Pelini holding up the cat, which is honestly probably the all-time great spring game moment. But no, I'm with you. I think it was more symbolic than usual of getting through it, getting everything that people typically want to get out of spring football. And, you know, in a lot of these places, it looked sunny. It looked like a great day to be outside watching football. So you did takeaways. You just said you're not you know, you don't want to make hot takes about any of this. But I did think what you wrote, and, you know, anyone who's listening who hasn't read it should check it out on The Athletic. It's basically like, honestly, it's spring game takeaways, but it's spring football takeaways. It's kind of, you know, laying out a lot of the quarterback races that are most interesting across the country. That feels like the most you can pull out of stuff like this, yeah, because you do see who goes with the ones, who goes with the twos. What stood out in terms of court? Again, like a lot of these, you know, there's no tackling or, you know, there's modified defensive efforts in these games. But what was the number one thing that jumped out to you coming out of this spring, coming out of this batch of spring games?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this particular weekend, when you have Alabama, Ohio State, and LSU all playing, you know, you just kind of want to have a little bit of a check-in on where they're at with their quarterback situations, all different, and I think pretty interesting. And obviously for all three of those programs, you're talking about, you know, this is going to be the thing that kind of sets the ceiling of how good they can be. So for Alabama, I don't know that you would really call it a competition, because it would be pretty shocking if anybody rose ahead of Bryce Young. I mean, he got the mop-up duty last year and got the game reps, and I think we've seen he's got a chance to be pretty special, and he had a good day for Alabama. They were missing a lot of their missing a lot of starters, and so you're not really going to get the cleanest performance out of that. But you know, he looked really, really good. He looked like Bryce Young, the kid that was in some people's eyes the number one, you know, quarterback and recruit in the country in his class. Ohio State, you know, three-man battle. I thought C.J. Stroud still looked like the guy. I know Bill Landis came out of watching that game feeling like he's going to be QB1. And although I thought it was actually Kyle McCord that impressed me too from that one, being the true freshman, I thought he looked pretty confident in just going out there and ripping it. And then the LSU one, I think, is a pretty – I mean, to me, LSU is one of the real interesting wild card teams of this whole season, because I think there's going to be – you know, a real bounce back from them, but also there's now kind of like a real amount of pressure on Ed Orgeron after what's gone on over the last 12 months or 15 months. So their four-man quarterback battle, you know, is that now kind of a two-man quarterback battle? That seemed to be Brody Miller's take coming out of it. But you know, after watching them play three different guys last year, like, I'm fascinated to know what direction that goes.
Yeah, I think LSU probably has the Of the teams that you mentioned, the most pressure on them. I think it's really fascinating to have an actual wide-open quarterback competition, especially with four. I mean, you know, it sort of felt like that was exaggerated, so getting down to two makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, we saw some things from Miles Brennan. I imagine, you know, that, you know, it's interesting because of, you know, what he went through from a health standpoint, to see him get to this point. You know, I was also watching Auburn's spring game and Bo Nix. When you talk about, again, people that kind of need to take a next step, again, like, so Auburn has a coaching change. Like, this is one of those opportunities. Again, you're trying to like pull strings of what to, you know, actually take away from these things. You have a coaching change, you have a new coordinator in Mike Bobo. Like, what is Auburn's offense going to look like? And I mean, I didn't think Bo Nix looked, you know, like super stellar. I don't think he looked bad. I think you did see that Auburn's going to use tight ends more. That's something they've really talked about. But you know, when I talked to Mike Bobo about Bo Nix recently for Auburn's State of the Program, he was talking about like getting his footwork down. So I do think you saw a little bit of an effort there. Again, it's really hard when It's not like a full scrimmage setting. But, you know, I just think these SEC quarterbacks, you know, and these programs that aren't Alabama just have so much pressure on them to get to that level. And it's not easy. And we saw how everything had to align for 2019 LSU. And I don't know if these teams have that in them, but I think the first step is, you know, kind of fixing quarterback and getting going.
Yeah, the Bo Nix one's interesting because it's like, is that what he is, right? After we've seen two seasons of him. Obviously, you know, he has some pretty high moments as a freshman, but you can understand why there is kind of skepticism from the Auburn fan base of like, is this just what Bo Nix is? Is he going to keep throwing off his back foot? Is he going to be, you know, a 59% passer? Not that he can play well in big games, certainly, but I think that's I'm curious to see kind of can Harsin and Bobo elevate him into a guy that can be, you know, an all SEC kind of player, because you remember at the end of his freshman year, what did Gus say? We're going to win a championship with him. I mean, the bar was set really, really high, and I think he's got good pieces around him, but it almost reminds me, like, when, back in our oldest podcast, Nicole, like the debating like JT Barrett and like some of these guys of like, is he what he is, or is there a potential there with the pieces around him that Bo Nix can end up turning into a guy that's not just a four-year starter, but a really high-level SEC player?
And someone who can play away from home, right? That's another knock on him, that his numbers are way, way, way better, Jordan Hare, than anywhere else. And obviously, you play big games elsewhere on the road.
You sure do. So, yeah.
I think that's going to be really interesting. I thought that Brian Harsin did a really good job with that staff. I think you hire two coordinators that have a ton of SEC experience.
Sure and do.
Derek Mason on the defensive side. So it's one of those coaching changes where, like, because it was such a shock that Gus got let go, it's not like the program's in a bad spot. It's not like this is a rebuild.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
a
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I want to go back to Ohio State and C.J. Stroud because it feels like it almost doesn't matter who is quarterback at Ohio State. Does that – and I don't mean that in a negative way, but I just feel like they are – they've been this way for a few years now where they just have insane receivers every single year, and it feels like you don't have to be perfect when you get the ball to a Garrett Wilson type because he's going to catch it and do something crazy in it. So is it almost like, is that a luxury that this fan base has that maybe we aren't thinking about as much because we do get fixated on who gets to be the starting quarterback?
I mean, I know Ari's thinking about it because I think I saw about 20 tweets from him on Saturday about the wide receivers there. No, it's insane. Like, watching that spring game, you're reminded, like, man, like, Chris Olave should be in the draft right now. He should not still be in Columbus. And he made, I think, probably a really smart business decision because of just how loaded this receiver draft is at the top. But like watching him, you know, win jump balls against guys and make, you know, these sideline toe tappers and stuff, like, he looked phenomenal. Garrett Wilson is Garrett Wilson. I think he's one of the best in the country. And so you take those two guys plus all of these, you know, top 100 recruit type wideouts that all have kind of different bodies and skill sets and stuff, and then you still have Jeremy Ruckert at tight end too. Like, it's pretty ridiculous. And then, you know, they look like they have three or four good running backs. I mean, I don't worry too much about losing Trey Sermon from that group, honestly, and Travion Henderson, the freshman coming up, I think is, you know, they call him baby Saquon. Like, I think he's going to be pretty special. So yeah, you're right. As long as the O-line, I think, is in good shape and not a weakness, which shouldn't be. I mean, you could roll out Stroud, you could roll out Jack Miller. You know, if you have injuries, you could play McCordon. They'd still probably roll pretty much everybody on their schedule, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think this is kind of the problem that the rest of the Big Ten runs into. Yeah. Is that they just don't. There's no rebuilding phase anymore for this program, for Alabama. Like, it's just terrifying almost every single year. And like Jack Sawyer looks like he's going to be the next beast. I mean, it's all of these positions that we have seen just produce elite NFL talent out of Columbus, and they're replenished. They're like, we're going to have these conversations. Is this going to be the best DN yet? I mean, we're going to continue doing that because Ryan Day,
like,
is...
It didn't seem fair on the kid for people to be like, oh, this kid's the next Bosa brother, this kid's the next Chase Young. And then you watch him and you're like, yeah, he is. He is, yep.
Yeah, and we know how they use him there. So it is, I think just very... as expected for those programs. And I think, you know, that's kind of the best case scenario coming out of spring, is guys not getting hurt and looking like, you know, kind of a jumping off period. How much do you actually gain in this period of time? Like, we always talk to coaches. I remember talking to them this time last year when they didn't have spring or they didn't finish spring.
Yeah.
And they were talking about all the things you miss. But having it, what are we seeing in terms of, like, next steps? I mean, we've seen some transfer quarterbacks, so I think that's very important to actually play with guys you're going to play with. But, yeah, like, from a fundamental team-building standpoint, what do we see?
I mean, from talking to coaches this spring, it just seems like there's a real gratefulness that they can actually go through the whole teaching process. I mean, you remember last year, like, you know, the early enrollees didn't even go through spring ball. Like, what's the point of being an early enrollee other than the, you know, the strength standpoint and conditioning, all that? You're not really getting a whole lot of that semester, that bonus semester you tried to add to your career.
And then you had to go home and you couldn't work out.
And then you had to go home and you know, lift wine bottles like Nicole in your house.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so that part of it's a little bit different. I mean, I think, you know, I just think for some of these staffs, you talk to them and they say, oh, you know, the usual spring stuff of we're going back to fundamentals and you know, trying to keep it simple and all that kind of stuff. But I think just the 15 practices, just getting to play in front of some distance fans again a little bit. And so, like, you know, some of these Big Ten programs, like, they had no, you know, they couldn't play in front of anybody last year. I'm sure that part of it is huge. I know the scrimmage they had the open practice they had in Lincoln this weekend was a big deal to everybody. But I do think just in terms of program building, it's just this missing piece from last year that just a normal winter, a normal spring, a normal summer is, I would think, going to yield a lot more consistent results, at least among the good to really good teams.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, mentioned guys that had transferred. I mean, you know, you wrote about him, Charlie Brewer, now at Utah. Like, we did see some – yeah, we saw some familiar names and new places. Was there anything else that jumped out to you, either maybe, you know, potential breakout players, guys that transferred, finally getting to see them play with their new pieces? Again, I know we're going to have another full weekend of spring games, but, you know, kind of at this midway point.
The one – you know, I mentioned those three, Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, but Georgia also, you know, had their spring game on Saturday. And I think you saw more of the stuff that you saw from sort, you know, when they went to JT Daniels, their last four games, they just changed. They were just, I mean, they were just a totally, offensively, they were just different. They took, you know, way more deep shots with him and became a much more explosive offense. And they even ran the ball better once they actually had a viable, you know, big play threat at quarterback with Daniels. And so even without George Pickens, like, watching their spring game, like, they look like they are, you know, building on what they're doing with Todd Monken's offense, which really kind of started to click at the end of the year. And then you saw the receiving corps, even without Pickens. I mean, the freshman Adonai Mitchell, who's a three-star dude, they don't take very many three-stars at Georgia, but he looked really good in playing George Pickens' spot, went over 100 yards. And then, you know, the receiving corps, even without Pickens, I thought looked really good. You know, bringing Darnell Washington into the mix more, you know, at tight end, he's just a monster. Like, I kind of think Georgia is the team, and maybe as we get into the, you know, summer and preseason and stuff, we'll be talking about them as a playoff team and stuff. But I think you're seeing them kind of take the steps that, you know, I think they're kind of back to where they should be, and I, to me, looking like, if it all kind of clicks and they stay healthy, that to me looks like a playoff team.
Yeah, and I think that this is the, you know, the JT Daniels we saw the second half of last year was what everyone thought immediately Georgia was getting, right? And you were coming off an injury and you were dealing with other things. But, you know, when there's all that excitement about landing a quarterback of that caliber, like, this is why. And I think for a program that has had its frustrations at that position since Justin Fields has left, I think that that's going to make a big difference. And I think you're right, because I think, you know, we went through this phase where every year everyone was kind of thinking, okay, this is, it's Alabama and Georgia and everybody else. Georgia gets
right, because,
the national championship
game. Look at 24/7. Georgia has everything they should need to be in this every year, right?
Yeah. And then you know, it's LSU that pops. And, you know, that there's these gaps with Georgia, or, you know, they kind of, you know, fall just short in these big games. And so, I think that
and Florida got over on them last year, you know,
yes,
just elite offense. You
and
know?
So I think this is the year where we kind of go back to, okay, like Ari will be proud, just kind of back to the recruiting rankings. And
the stars are going to matter. I would think so.
The stars are.
But and that's you know, it's exciting to watch them because, you know, for them to open up with Clemson, I think is really one potentially you know, one of the best games of the year to open this thing up. So that is, and whoever loses that game is not out of the playoff by any means. They'll have the best loss in the country potentially. But I mean, I think that is I'm certainly fired up for that one to kind of be a tone setter early on for this 2021 season.
Yeah, that's the game that I wish they would just have every year as their opener. We had that stretch. And you know, it'd be pretty cool. Cause I think, you know, it helps Clemson to have at least one of those types of games just to quiet everyone who's eventually going to say, well, who have they played in the ACC,
right. Yeah.
Which honestly I think is a little bit of a, you know, selling the rest of the league short. You have a lot of teams that are kind of emerging and on the upswing. Before we get off kind of the, you know, extrapolating from spring games, tell me about some of the breakout players, or at least maybe young players that I'm sure the individual fan bases know, but these guys are going to become maybe more national.
Yeah, the first one, and we already talked about Jack Sawyer, but the guy that really broke out in Alabama's spring game over the weekend, they didn't have John Metchie available, and obviously you're replacing two wideouts that are going to be, I would think, top 10, top 15 picks. So who's next up with that receiver factory? And it looks like Ajay Hall. He looks like that dude. I mean, he really broke out, number 5 rated wideout in the 2021 class. Really made big improvement. That's a great example of what's the value of spring. That's an early enrollee that has a chance to go out and really prove that he, you know, belongs on the field for the defending champs. I thought he, you know, really looks like an explosive wideout for them. And then, you know, we mentioned Charlie Brewer. Good to see him back and kind of gaining his confidence back again after a frustrating, fourth year at Baylor there. That's going to be an interesting competition if he can win that. And then a couple more transfers that just stood out to me. Charleston Rambo, who, you know, was Oklahoma's second best wide receiver in 2019, I thought was really going to break out in 2020. He's now at Miami, and once Derek King's back, those guys are going to hook up a lot. I think he's a real difference maker for them at wideout. And then it was good to see Keontae Ingram at USC, the Texas transfer, who I think that's a guy that also his confidence was really shook in 2020 with a couple of really untimely fumbles, lost the TCU game, had one in Red River. You know, that's a guy that change of scenery is perfect for him. I think he has a chance to be one of the more dynamic backs in the Pac-12 for that offense, which – If Keaton Slovis can get better and that offensive line can, I don't know, find some guys that can play offensive line. I mean, that was a little bit concerning for SC over the weekend in terms of them trying to, you know, be the best team in the Pac-12. You saw some kind of clear red flags there, but I thought Keontae Ingram and the dudes they have at wideout, I think, were impressive.
By the way, dude is a term, an analytical term. It is literally in your takeaways. I think it's an important distinction of, you know, whether someone's that dude or just
right.
a regular player.
Are they just another guy or are they a dude? That's exactly. What this is all about. Yeah.
Exactly. Which is, this is the type of analysis that only Max Olson can provide.
This is what people come to Power Hour for, is for this kind of
exactly.
Bro analytics that I'm offering here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I wanted to hit on the coach and the program that are doing spring quite differently than everybody else. This is Iowa State. Now, I did a story on them a couple weeks ago, back when you were still on paternity leave, so, you know, you can't get mad at me. But Matt Campbell,
you know, I am familiar with Matt Campbell. Go on.
Yes. He did say to say hello and asked how little Theo was. See, now, like, you just have all this content from this human.
I can find, you know, this is, I'm glad you brought this up. I can finally relate to coaches now, because coaches, you know, having a kid is just such a nice icebreaker. Now, you know, the age gap isn't quite the same when you can, like, tell kid stories. So
this
Theo is really a huge asset for my life.
Yeah, I think it's about having common ground with people you cover, the physical content, like the meme ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably makes people remember more things about you, because they'll want to remember things about Theo.
Yeah, it's taken me from potentially unlikable to slightly more likable. That's clear.
I won't comment on the first part of that. But yeah. So let's talk about your close personal friend, Matt Campbell. He basically said, we actually like what we did in the COVID year in terms of, like, obviously everyone went home for a couple months, but when they came back and there was the return to play 6-week ramp up period from the NCAA, he felt like it worked. He thought it was good. It was kind of like NFL OTAs and kind of this like acclimatization period, conditioning first. And he felt like they were fresher throughout the season. He felt like they recovered better and that they were playing better late in the year. Now, Iowa State then went on to have its best season, arguably ever, but certainly in recent memory. And he basically decided to keep a lot of what they did last year. And I think that was really interesting because a lot of coaches just went back to exactly how they would have structured it in like 2019. And I know you've written about and talked to Matt Campbell about this a lot, how he's just kind of a different thinker. But the ability to say like, hey, there was something that kind of clicked and we're not going to go back and do everything everyone else does, I thought was really interesting. And I thought he made the point that like they can't do things the way that everybody else does because then they will just get beat by better players in other places.
Yeah, at Iowa State, it is a really interesting challenge for Matt Campbell every year to try to figure out. I think the thing we saw when they started breaking out was, wow, they play really well in October and can, you know, beat the Oklahomas and TCUs and pull these big upsets. But how do you, you know, but then they run out of gas in November because it's Iowa State. You don't have the depth of Ohio State, you know, you just don't. And so you have a couple injuries, you have a couple guys that play really, you know, you kind of spend it all on these big games early and then run out late. And so they did a much better job of that in 2020. Part of that is their strength coach, Dave Andrews, and that was a big upgrade they made. But I think, you know, now in 21, they have a really interesting challenge because on paper, you look at the fact that they have almost everyone back and you say this has the potential to be a top 10 team, like a real serious one that could be, you know, in the mix and challenge Oklahoma again and everything. And so how do you get them to play their best ball and not screw it up? And so you think back to a year ago, Matt Campbell, when all these coaches were talking about, I need 6 weeks, I need 8 weeks, we got to get back on campus, we got to get going. Matt Campbell's the guy who's saying, guys, I came from Mount Union. We showed up in August and we got after it for a month and then we played and won championships. And so I think he just has a different perspective than most folks that when people were advocating for more, he's like, if you give me 4 weeks, we'll be fine, we'll be ready. Now of course they lost to Louisiana to open it up, so you know, you've got to kind of calibrate things still and
avoid those pitfalls.
And they have to beat Iowa this year.
That result didn't really matter according to the college football playoff.
The committee loved that result. Yeah. But you know, so obviously like they need to calibrate it so that they are playing well at the start, that they find a way to beat Iowa finally this year. But no, I think the back to basics and not overdoing it in the spring makes a ton of sense for them because they have all these guys, they have all this experience. You know, let's, like I said, they have to figure out how do we maximize this and not kind of blow our shot here.
Yeah, so I think it'll be something that's going to be interesting to follow. They really did very little contact. They did very little 11-on-11, and they started late. They started a lot later than they normally did to sort of, A, there's twofold reasons, like, Matt Campbell was like, listen, we want them to actually be excited to be out there. Our season went long. It was a really tough year. Like, we want to give them a little bit of a break mentally. But also, he felt like it feeds into May and June, player-led workouts, which feeds into, you know, fall camp. So it's just, it's a flow thing. It's just reimagining the off-season calendar. If it works, other people will steal it. So going to be
And you got to, you know from covering last season, like, so many of these coaches, by the end of it, you know, and staffers you talk to were like, we've had these kids since, what was it, June? Mid-June?
Yeah.
And we have been just absolutely controlling them every day since June. They can't go home. They can't do anything. It's a very, you know, joyless, like, you know, academic experience for them, basically. Like, it was, not only was it a hard season to get through, but just from the player's standpoint, like, everybody was just gripping the wheel as hard as they could for that whole season. And so it makes sense to, from in their case, the Fiesta Bowl on, say, like, let's relax a little bit. Like, let's recharge here, because that was, especially for a team that played a conference title game and a New Year's Six bowl game like they did, like you know the tank's empty. You know, you gotta recharge, and I think that's probably true for a lot of these programs that you just went through so much, you know, mentally and physically last year that I think it makes sense to let up a little bit and not just kind of grind them down.
And, you know, we talked about it, wrote about it a lot, but that's why people opted out of bowl games, to start that a little sooner. So I think this return to normalcy is going to be big, is going to be really helpful just to get everybody back on track, back on a normal off-season calendar. We're going to also start to see the impact of the new transfer world order. The notification deadline for this year only is going to be July 1st. So guys will have up until then to say, I'm going to transfer. Coaches can't block them anymore. And then they would be immediately eligible for the fall. First time transfers only. So it's very possible some of these rosters look a little bit different by the time we get to fall camp too. But I think that's just
these
something.
These coaches do not want July 1 annually. That's tough, because how do you replace those players when you don't,
right,
you know, when you don't have these extra scholarships? And so it's going to be like it. You feel bad for the folks that are publishing the annual college football preview magazines in May, because that's what this sport's going to be now. There's going to be some probably high-profile players and maybe just a huge quantity of players making moves here after spring ball.
Yeah, in normal years, it'll be a May 1st deadline. Still a challenge. Still, like you said, hard to find. You know, people are going to have to designate scholarships that they're going to save for guys like that who don't win a job in spring or whatever it might be. So it's going to be really interesting to see all of that start to play out, see how the fallout of that all looks now that we know it's officially here.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Max, before you go, we have to do our last call segment, which is, for those who listen and don't and have never heard it before, it can go in two different directions. It's basically what would happen at 2 a.m. at a bar. Theo-less, no baby at the bar, but just sort of like, okay, we're having a great night. Like, let's cheers to something we haven't hit on yet. Or we're going to rant about something, because also that's what you do at the end of the night at a bar. So I'm going to go first because I came up with a perfect rant. It is something that I have been ranting about on an almost daily basis in my personal life for weeks now. But I think that Trevor Lawrence has just pushed me over the edge. It is the pre-draft season. Mm. I could not hate it more. I think everyone is working.
You know what? Let's
so
go. This is going to be mine too. Let's go. Let's do this.
Everyone is working so hard to make a mountain out of a molehill on every little topic. The fact that Trevor Lawrence had to apologize for having football in the proper context in his life, not more important than family, not more important than religion. He just got married. Like, the dude has a great head on his shoulders and understands this is a game that he's very talented at, that he puts a lot of work in, but a championship is not going to, like, make or break his life experience. He had to walk that back to say, no, I'm really competitive, I promise. That's a bad ecosystem.
Yes. Okay. The draft process is ludicrous. It just is. Here's my first take, okay? What do pro football writers do on Saturdays? What do they do? They just travel? I mean, what do they do?
I think they
hang out with their kids.
Yes.
Do they watch movies? I mean,
I do not
think
they watch.
Does anybody freaking watch the college football season prior to the draft season?
No.
It's baffling to me. Like, and it's always funny, like, when we have these, like, you watch the NFL people, like, kind of catch up to the stuff we've been talking about. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, it's like, oh, my God, like, oh, wow, Baker's, like, just got all these intangibles. Oh, my God. Oh, wow, Sam Darnold's, like, got some accuracy issues. Like, it's like, yeah, like, where you been? Yeah. Like, and we're doing that again. But, like, to me, I just can't, like, what are we doing to Justin Fields? What are these people doing to Justin Fields? Like, why are we making this harder than it needs to be? It's insane to me. And I got no problem with Zach Wilson. I don't. Like, that's fine. Kind of a one-year deal, but it's fine. But the whole, like, the whole number three pick and Justin Fields, we're trying to, like, people trying to talk themselves into him being unworthy of the number three pick and falling out of the top 10 or something. Like, what are we doing?
Well, how can we talk about someone falling when the draft night hasn't even happened? You don't even know where he's going to be drafted. And I feel like this stuff is getting worse and worse because things are more straightforward in some of these years. Like this year. Like, it should be very straightforward. The order of the quarterbacks, number one overall pick. And yet, it's like forcing narratives in place that I can't stand. You're right, though. So, I remember the first time
And then it's also like, if you love Justin Fields, then you have to, like, make Mac Jones a villain, right? And vice versa.
Right. Which,
like,
again...
What is that?
Why? Like, I understand that you kind of want to be able to say, like, oh, I knew that... You know, like, 5 years from now, you want to say that you personally, kind of felt the right order of these quarterbacks. But it's just so unnecessary. And it's cutthroat. It's cruel. And, again, it just feels like everyone is just being used for content and not actually evaluating stuff. Because, you know, you could talk about fit. You could certainly talk about, like, that organization and what they're looking for and what their receivers and their running backs and their offensive line look like. But that's not what people are doing. People are literally making, like, these referendums about running quarterbacks or about black quarterbacks in Justin Fields' case. Or, you know, about...
Ohio State quarterbacks. Like, what does that mean for Justin Fields? Like, who cares?
Or in Mac Jones, same thing. Past Alabama quarterbacks, right? Or like, discounting because of all the weapons he had around him. Well, you know what? Like, a lot of these quarterbacks, Joe Burrow had insane weapons around him. Like, we don't have to do this.
Yeah.
We don't have to do this. And it is so frustrating. It reminds me... Was Sam Darnold the quarterback who had to also explain that he cared about football? I think Rosen
Josh had to Rosen, do a lot of that, which, you know, and then his career didn't work out so hot. But you remember the Lamar Jackson, is he a quarterback deal? Yep. That, I mean, they got months out of that.
I remember when Todd Gurley started to produce in the NFL, people were like, oh, wow, Todd Gurley's really good. Why wasn't he a Heisman contender? We're like, did you not pay attention? Oh, he would have been. It was just...
Well, this is going to sound disrespectful. I don't mean this disrespectfully. It's just an observation. Somehow I love the draft. I love watching the draft. I care about it. I read everything Dane Brugler writes. Like, I enjoy this stuff. But this thing has become so big over the years that everyone on Twitter, every single NFL fan, like, now fancies themselves a draft expert. Oh, I watched this film. Here's what this guy does and doesn't do. Here's why we're going to get him. Why we need... It's like, I think that's part of, like, it just gets... The noise is so loud because freaking everyone on Twitter thinks they're a draft expert now.
I think that's definitely part of it.
Some people are. I'm not saying people aren't allowed to care about this stuff. I'm just saying that, oh my God, you see they're like the replies to all this stuff, and and the people weighing in, and, like, there are a lot of really good people. I'm not saying only journalists can weigh in on the draft. It's just, like, freaking every NFL fan watches a little bit of YouTube and has takes.
Absolutely. So this is a great team last call, because this is one of my giant pet peeves in all of the sports calendar every single year. This year, I'm just over the top with the fact that Trevor Lawrence, who is the best quarterback in the draft, going to be an amazing pro, won a national championship.
Nicole, did Trevor lose any money on this? No, he's going number one. he's going to get all these endorsements. He got his shoe
people,
deal. And all that.
People
like
sent him wedding
how
gifts.
Is this like? How is this bad for Trevor Lawrence to be like? I'm a normal person.
I'm
like,
sorry.
He's having to apologize when it's not. He's not fallen in the draft or anything. Urban Meyer's not going to talk himself into somebody else.
And did he not like lead a We Want to Play football movement? It's wild. I was literally before we were recording this, I was reading a take about. Well, you know, like maybe in a couple of years he'll, you know, have this chip on his shoulder and just be like consumed with winning. Maybe Urban Meyer will bring it out of him. I'm like, no, this is fine, guys. Like he's been the best of the best at his position his entire life, wired the way that he does. He's fine. He's very competitive. We don't need to be like thinking about football 24/7. So anyway, the draft itself, awesome. Everything leading up to it, not awesome. And that is the last call of this week's episode because I need a drink. We need to calm down. I just need to vent and get that off my shoulders.
I'm good with that. I can't wait to just fast forward to this draft and watch it and just can we just shut out all the
Well, then we'll start for next year, so just start preparing for that.
No doubt.
Well, Max, thank you so much for joining Power Hour. This was great. Please send our love to little Theo, the content machine.
I will do that. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, Andy Staples will be back later this week in the feed with Ari Wasserman up to their usual antics. And Power Hour will be back next Tuesday. I'm Nicole Auerbach. Thanks for listening.